And I put it on, and I remember getting pricked by needles, used needles. And even at 8, I was like, I can't do this.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
All right. Welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery, a show about recovery, spirituality, and being human. Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show. Yay! I'm Josie, and tonight, to my right, I've got Kim co-hosting, and to my left, we have our special guest, Kelsey. Kelsey is a trauma-informed certified yoga instructor and 12-step recovery certified, and works at 11 treatment facilities in Metro Atlanta.
Hi.
Hi, Kelsey. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you. So I know Kelsey from, can I say the place?
You can't.
Okay.
I cannot.
I can say it. So I went to Southeast Addiction, and Kelsey was a facilitator there. She was a yoga instructor. And so now 19 months forward, here we are. I thought you'd be great to come on and share your story.
Yeah.
So why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I was the fortunate daughter of an addict, grew up with active addiction in my home, and, you know, I grew up super obsessed with addiction. I read all of the books. I remember being in, like, seventh grade, and my dad's like, you have to read something else. Like, this is not great for you. But the obsession became because of – I didn't understand, right? Like, I didn't understand, like – I'm sure most people, most addicts who are trying to get some kind of help, they're like, just stop using, right? That your loved ones, just stop. And I didn't understand that that wasn't an option. So I became submerged in it. And then long story short, life takes you where life takes you. And I remember one Christmas I asked my ex, I said, I don't want anything for the holidays that doesn't benefit my mind, my body, my spirit. Mm-hmm. And he ended up getting me a gift card to a yoga studio, which put me on the trajectory of getting my yoga teacher certification. And it became really powerful for me. You know, I learned a lot about myself through the certification and all of that. And then long story short, I had a friend who did the same program, my same teacher training. She got a gig at a facility and she called me. She said, I can't fucking do this. And she's like, these are not my people, you know? And she knew that I had just completed my yoga for 12-step recovery course. And she knew that I just completed that course, and she loved to work with children, not me, you know? Mm-hmm. And I took over, and it kind of happened very serendipitously. And then all of a sudden I got the opportunity to work at one facility, then two, then three, and COVID happened. And then I lost my real job, and it took off totally organically. And I found myself doing it full time, you know, mm-hmm. being in the rooms full time. And, you know, my story isn't different than most of my clients, you know, as far as my childhood goes. I just took a different route. My drug of choice per se would be an addict. The innate desire to fix somebody was like born and bred into me. Mm-hmm. And it nearly killed me, you know. Getting in the rooms really taught me a lot about myself. You know, I remember the first session I went to teach, I had my little yoga mat, I had all of my gizmos and gadgets, and I was like, I'm going to cure them. I'm going to do it. And I got in there and they looked at me like, who the fuck are you? And I was like, oh, yep. Hell. Like this, and that was like the reality check. This ain't about me. If I'm coming in with an agenda of what I want to do, I'm not being of service, you know? So it was a humbling experience for me to have of like kind of getting hip checked and really leaning into what can I actually provide, you know? Yeah. It's not a vinyasa flow, Buckhead Betty approach. It's, hey, what's a forward fold feel like in your body?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I just, side note, I forgot to mention, we do have another special guest. We have a little Walter.
Walter, you can't see him.
Walter Senior is in here. So if you hear any blup, 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 or gas, it's Walter. We're not farting. It's Walter farting.
It is. I swear.
So take us back a little bit. So you mentioned, so for context, Kelsey is a normie, an earth person,
an ally,
a friend. So growing up in a household impacted by addiction, you mentioned your mom. Walk us through like early childhood and what that was like for you.
Yeah, it was war. And of course, when it's your childhood, it's what you know, right? So I didn't know the things that, I mean, there's some, like, I think there's some kind of moral compass that, like, I know this isn't good. Like, I don't know if anyone's old enough to remember Upton's, the department store, but I remember my mom would convince me to go down to her trap house in the middle of the night at like 3 a.m., put me on the floorboard of the car, put a blanket over me, leave me for hours. But she used to say, I'll get you a shirt from Upton's. And so there was this like innate knowing, like something's not right, you know, like a mother doesn't do that, but also it's my mother. Doesn't she have my best interest, you know? And I, you know, I lived a life of putting a tourniquet on my mother at six and learning to drive at seven because she would nod out behind the wheel and we had places to be. I don't fault her anymore. I'm not angry with her anymore because of the work I do. Like, I realize now that she was a whole human, you know, and she was very sick. She also had some really great qualities about her too. When she was good, she was so good, you know, which creates an interesting issue too, because there is a mother I get to mourn because she was a mother when she could be, you know, but I stopped talking to her at eight. I remember specifically there was one event. She had a Dallas Cowboys, go Giants, starter jacket, and I put it on, and I remember getting pricked by needles, used needles, and even at eight, I was like, I can't do this, you know, and I set the boundary, which my dad lovingly supported, you know, I don't think my dad could ever face the reality of my childhood, because they did live separately. What happened at mom's, I knew he would never validate, because he couldn't sign off on me living that life, you know? So much like, again, this is dating me a little bit, but the TV programs used to come printed in the newspaper. And my mom used to like circle. She worked as a waitress. She would circle, I'm going to be home by this show. Like, I'll be home. And she would go missing for weeks, you know, which created, obviously, most of us have an abandonment, attachment kind of wounds, and that created that. And I just couldn't do that anymore. And so at eight, I said, Dad, I want to live with you. I don't want to see Mom anymore. And he honored it. He always left the door open, which I thought was very brave and very kind of him. He always said, this ball is in your court. I will support whatever you choose.
That's a lot of pressure to put on a 8-year-old.
Yeah.
Or on an elementary school age child. Like, me being a mother, I can't, like, I remember leaving my oldest son's dad because he was an active addiction. I can't even imagine being like, well, you know, son, it's up to you. Do you want to stay here or do you want to come with me? Knowing, so that's a lot of pressure to put on you. Did you realize that at the time? Like,
no, I think, you know, when you grow up in active addiction, you become an adult really young, you know, and most kids think they know everything, right? And at the end of the day, I do think it was the right decision. It was a really hard decision for sure, but I think it was, I wonder what my life would look like now if she stayed around, like if I let her continue to be in my life. Now, to your point, that is a decision that no 8-year-old should ever have to make, you know, or ever be pressured to. And I wasn't pressured to make it, but there probably should have been some outside intervention, like therapy or something of that sort, to kind of help navigate that. But it was the right decision, you know. I remember when she passed, because she died of a overdose, suicide overdose, when I was 23. And I called my dad and I was like, you know, I just can't believe. I found out she lived in Doraville. And up the street from me, 10 minutes. I'm like, I can't believe I just never ran into her on MARTA. You know, just, I'm always beep bopping around. And he was like, Kelsey, she wouldn't even recognize you. And that was like, he didn't realize like the damage that I'm like, oh, my own mother wouldn't recognize me.
You might not even recognize her.
Yeah. Well, I found her mugshot, so I know what she was looking like, you know. I always stayed like a couple strings attached. You know?
And what was it like with like friendships and with other children?
Well, funny, working in the field I work in, and because I did grow up here, I get the opportunity that clients come in and they're like, shit, I know her, you know? And so much so, I had a friend, a good friend from high school, become a client of mine. And my approach is, I don't say anything. Like, I let them come to me. I want to keep it as safe as possible. Took her a couple weeks and she finally said, all right, I'm ready. I'm ready to acknowledge this thing. And, you know, we caught up, and in one of the groups, she looked at me and she goes, Kelsey, you're always the good kid who hung out with all the fucked up kids. And not that I think any of my clients are fucked up or anything like that, but I was always the one who was trying to save people before I even knew that they needed to be saved, you know? And I think I shared the story with you, like the first boy I ever loved, I had his picture on a orange construction paper that I used to keep in my pocket. I loved him so much. Ended up a heroin addict, right? And there was something in little baby me that recognized something in him that was so familiar, right? And that created all of my closest friends, and from childhood to adulthood, ended up either getting sober or needing to get sober, you know? And I truthfully believe, because of what I grew up in, it felt like home, you know? Like, it felt natural and normal for me to be the caretaker, for me to be the one who makes excuses for people, for me to clean up their messes, for me to kind of puzzle piece things together for them because they were incapable. Now, did it ever fucking work? No. But, you know, yeah, I've spent my whole life loving, truly loving addicts, you know? And before, I loved myself, in all honesty, and it nearly killed me. And that was the gift of getting in the line of work, like, really checked me on that, you know?
Yeah. I think that definitely we can relate as addicts. You know, for me, I would try to do the same thing of, like, help, let me help and fix things. And, like, I grew up in a, you know, pretty normal household. But, you know, I wanted to, like, fix and do things to, like, deflect, because I, you know, I knew I had things inside of me, but it was like, I was ashamed. I was embarrassed. And it's like, well, maybe if I take this person who's like more fucked up than me and I can like paint them and make them pretty and stuff, then like it will take away from my stuff. You agree with that?
Oh yeah. Well, especially in early, like even in active use, like I would define myself by my ability to help others. And I didn't learn until pretty early on in recovery that that was totally a way of me not looking at my own stuff. It was just, if I can help you, I don't have to think about me.
I think I tried to validate my human experience and my worth through, because I couldn't save my mom. If I can save these other people, maybe that will redeem me for not being able to save my mom. But she was like, now I see, I'm in this place where I can see her death and her struggle as a gift, you know, because I do get to do things that I freaking love. Like, I love sitting in the room and talking to clients and like learning about them and knowing like, yeah, me fucking too, dude. You know, me too. We are one in the same.
Yeah. And that was what was really cool about having you in group is that you I could just feel that, like that relatability and just the way that you would approach like talking to us. And you know, you would have like you're so smart. Like, she is extremely intelligent. And, you know, I was like, gosh, like, you're just this incredible incredible, incredible woman. And yet, like, you've been through so much, but you aren't an addict, but like, you can relate to us. And so, you know, I loved that about your groups. And before the show, we're talking about like patterns that you recognize in your work that mirrored your own healing.
Yeah. So I found, with some soul searching, I became aware that when a woman who was a mother specifically mothers, would enter, like become a new client, I would shut, like I could physically feel my body like power off, you know? And it was an opportunity for me to be like, whoa, what is that? Because truthfully, and I hope my clients know that I want the best for them always, even the ones that drive me fucking crazy. And some of you may be watching and I love you dearly, but you drive me crazy. But I truthfully want that. So I was like, why am I not showing up in my authenticity with these clients in particular? Mm-hmm. Right. And that's because that wound was still very, I think there was a little bit of like jealousy. Like, why does somebody else's mom get to do this and mine didn't?
I was going to ask you if there was resentment, maybe.
Well, for sure.
Like, for me, being a mother, and when I was in treatment, I was like, I am such a bad mom that I'm here and, like, not taking care of my kids. You know, that was, like, huge for me, like, beating myself up, and thinking, like, other people, if I admit, like, I'm a single mom of two kids. What? How dare you? And there were, you know, very rarely, but especially my normie friends, they were like, how can you leave your kids? And then I remember hearing about other people like talking shit about me behind my back. Mm. Like, oh, she's like on a vacation. And it was like my worst, you know. So, you know, did you feel like resentment or more so jealousy?
I think it was jealousy first and then resentment towards. Well, the resentment came with clients who didn't take it seriously, who were mothers, right? And I'm like, you have little tiny nuggets whose lives are on the line that just want a mommy, you know? Yeah. And that was like my little inner girl was like, I just want a mommy. Like, how do you not take this seriously? So I think it was primarily jealousy, but what I have one specific client that comes to mind, and she made me very prickly. She did not. I found myself very prickly around her. That was about me. She did nothing. My perspective changed when I said, tell me your story. And our stories were so fucking similar. Mm-hmm. So similar that I was like, yeah, this is a me problem, you know? And I will say, I think still to this day, I can find myself holding mothers a little bit more firmly, and I'm a little bit more assertive. Like, hey, this is not a joke, you know? Like, and that, again, that is on me. But the biggest gift I have was like, or the biggest gift I got from that was just like, yeah, let me lean in, you know? And I love Brené Brown, and she always says people are hard to hate close up, so lean in. Mm. Like, lean in. We all have differing opinions, beliefs, views, right? But if you tell me why, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I totally get why. Relatable. You believe that. Mm-hmm. I still believe this, but I get it, you know? And it was a really big hump for me to kind of get over. And then now I find it kind of shifted me into this, like, I'm a girl's girl now, you know? Yeah. Like, women are amazing powerhouses, right? And when we put our mind to something and we want it, we fucking do it, you know? And to, like, support other women in that is really powerful.
Yeah, it is. And there's an exercise that we did that sticks out to me is you were, like, on a piece of paper, write down your deepest, darkest secret that you've never revealed. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there and I was like, I don't know, I have nothing. Mm-hmm. And I didn't say it, but I, you know, I was just like, and you looked right at me and you were like, everyone's got something. And you're like this, and you're like drinking and driving with your children. And it was like, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, that's not okay. And like writing that down, and then like you gave us the opportunity. You're like, if you want to, you can. We're gonna. She like read them, and she said, you can say like, hey, that's me, or you don't have to. But that took so much off of me. Mm. But yeah, I could feel like I don't know, like womanly energy. Yeah. And it was really cool. Yeah.
That's the shame circle, right? Because it's anonymously write down the things you feel most ashamed of. And I go and I kind of categorize them, because if you're like, well, I drove drunk and hit my tuxedo cat and then I forgot to pick up pizza, like super specific stuff, I would categorize it, right?
Yeah.
Like I committed harm while I was under the influence or something like that. And then I have everyone stand up. I read them. And if they have also done the same thing, they stand up. And we come to know nobody stands up alone, right? Everybody's, you're not that unique. There's 7 billion people in this earth. You think you're the only one who's driven with their kids drunk?
Yeah. It can feel that way when you're holding on to that secret.
Yeah, absolutely.
It can 100% feel that way.
Yeah.
That was one of the most powerful parts of my recovery, was like even the dirtiest, darkest, deepest stuff.
Yeah.
There was always someone who was like, oh my God, me too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that and not alone.
And if you work a sponsor-sponsee relationship, right? Your sponsor's done the shit too that saved your life, right? And that's something I tell my friends all the time. Like, the shit that you are most ashamed of is what qualifies you to save somebody else's life.
Mm-hmm. 1,000%. Now that I'm sponsoring women, when we sit down to step work, it's like, it's such, this week, I was even like brought to tears, because I'm like, wow, we are so connected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our lives may have been different, but when like that vulnerability and that like breaking down and sharing, it just like gave me goosebumps all over. And it was like, I felt like a tie.
Yeah.
Like, unlike anything I've ever felt before. Yeah. It's really cool. We had talked about beforehand too. What was it, Kiana? Sorry, I'm blanking.
Which part?
I can tie into that really quickly.
Okay, bam.
So that's like the experience of somebody saying, yeah, me too, goes right to the body, right?
Hmm. Yep, there
because
we go.
Because if you have been around this planet for 12 seconds now, you've probably heard of the book, The Body Keeps the Score. It's become, again, a bestseller. And that is a testament to what I do, right? Like, to share something is to relieve a weight. It is to relieve the pressure valve, right? And that's where our body does store all this stuff. And that's why, like, that's why I do what I do, right? Like, the neuroscience behind it and all of that, we, unfortunately, if you experience trauma and you don't process it, it doesn't go poof.
Right.
You know, it is one of my favorite teachers. She says the issues live in our tissues, you know?
The issues live in our tissues.
Yeah. Womp womp. That's a bummer. But it's true, you know, and that's like the power of working a program and then don't eat that. Working a program and then also incorporating physical practices, you know, if you're, it's kind of like, you go to a therapist to talk about your feelings. You go to a physical therapist to get the kinks out of your body. You go, you know, like it all needs to kind of come together.
Yeah.
You know, and that is the gift of like, thank God facilities are incorporating physical practices now, you know, because I'll put somebody in a figure four on their back and it's a big hip opener and they're like, why am I crying? What's going on?
I'm like,
you are releasing. Huh. You are releasing, you know? Yeah.
Have you... anonymously, can you share like a time where, or maybe like in the beginning, like that you had somebody do something physical and then they had like this big release and like, what was that like? What was that energy like? What was the room like?
Yeah. So, I have a specific client that comes to mind when you ask that, and I put her in a hip opener and she had a lot of childhood stuff like all of us, you know, and she just started sobbing. And I went over, I sat with her. I said, do you need to get up and leave or do you want to stay? And she said, I want to stay. I said, okay. Do you want to talk about it? She said, in a minute. And she felt through it a little bit, which was so brave, so courageous. And she was like, all of a sudden this memory, she shared a memory about an abuse she experienced in her childhood. She was like, I don't know where it came from. I think I've blocked that out. And luckily she was ready to kind of unpack that a little. You know, I think sometimes it can be a little jarring if you block some things out and they pop up. But yeah. But that's the blessing of being in a treatment program. Like, you are in a supportive space to kind of dive in. But she sat with it. She then ended up going and grabbing a journal and like wrote it out, you know. And she came back to me next week. She was like, I never experienced anything like that, you know. And there's been practices forever about utilizing art, like dance, right? Dance is always, it was used for celebration. It was used for grief. It was used for weather, you know. It's moving energy out of the body. And mm-hmm. obviously yoga is an ancient practice as well. It's moving stuff, you know, and releasing it. Because mm-hmm. you carry it around, you're going to get sick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I used to always be like, I can't dance. I don't dance. I don't like to dance. And like recently, I'll just break out into dance. Yeah. And it feels so good. It does. And like Kim dances a lot.
I love it.
And I love when like we turn on music. The other day I was in the car. All of us interns went out to Publix and we were playing music. And it was like, Kim was dancing and like Katie was in the back and she's moving and Sarah's moving. And it was just like, you could just, I swear if you could like put a visual to it, it'd be like little gray fogs. Like, I don't like
pressure release.
Yeah. Cause it was just like I hate to sound corny, but it's like the vibes were so high in that car. Wow. The vibes were exploding in that car.
The way I describe it is like, I get into these, it can be a myriad of different causes, but like my body just starts to hold on to energy. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if I don't find a way to let this out, mm-hmm. this is going to get weird and it's going to possibly get bad.
Right.
So like, why not dance? Yeah. Why not do two laps around the building? Mm-hmm. Because I'm just like,
well, and I always go back to animals because I love them so much. But if I tussle with Walter, right, the first mm-hmm. thing he does is he shakes after. Mm-hmm. He's releasing it from his body.
Oh, yeah, like dogs. Or they'll be like...
It's just releasing it from his body. Like, it's intuitive.
Yeah.
But we get scared of, oh, I look like a weirdo, which, fuck, you might. But, like, who cares, yeah. you
Embrace
know?
Embrace the weird.
Yeah.
I definitely look weird.
I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. It's great. Yeah. And I wanted to know, so can you tell us what... Have you had a moment like that? That type of release, of, like, physical release? Or we're talking about, like, you know, your friend. Do you want to, like... Yeah. Get into that.
So, you know, I always share that, like, I started with yoga because I didn't like my body. I wanted to change my body. And then I stayed for, like, the mental aspects, right? And my pivotal point in, like, my healing journey was one of my late friends, one of my dear friends, was murdered at my work. It's a pretty prominent story. It's the Barcelona Wine Bar murder. We were robbed and they shot her in the shoulder and she didn't survive. And
I'm sorry.
Thank you. I remember calling her mother in the morning because I got the news that she was shot. I didn't know she had died. Mm-hmm. And I called her mother in the morning and I said, hey, I'm on the way to Grady. What do you need? Do you want me to bring breakfast? Blah, blah, blah. And Dana just said she didn't make it. I'm like, I know she didn't make it to brunch because she was supposed to open. And I was like, I know, like, duh. Obviously, I wouldn't think she'd be at brunch, you know. And she was like, no, she didn't make it. And I mean, I hit my knees, you know. It was, it shook the whole restaurant community, I think, in Atlanta. And we did get a lot of support, which was great. But for me, that was the point where I was like, I can go one of two ways with this. Mm-hmm. I can ruin my life, which I still kind of did in a few ways. I'm much better now. But, or I can like double down, right? And that's, I signed up for my first half marathon right after. So she died November 19th, 2018, and I ran my first half, the Publix half, which was like March of the next year. So I was deep in my practice at that point. I was teaching for a couple studios, and I remember I'd roll out my mat, all right, I'm ready to be here, and I'd do like three postures and just sob, and just sob and sob and sob. And luckily, the places I knew kind of knew what was going on, so they kind of let me have my thing. It wasn't like a big to-do. But I also knew that if I didn't do something, that I was going to continue to carry this around, you mm-hmm. know? And that was the point where I really found my body again, if that sounds weird. You know, I think we're all walking around in these meat suits all the time and we're not really aware.
I love you when
know?
You say meat suits.
Yummy. but like, and this, I'll tell clients, you know, lay on your backs, put the soles of your feet together, knees out wide, and they have no clue. Mm-hmm. And that is not to make them bad or wrong. They just are so disconnected from their bodies, you know, and how are you going to heal the thing that carries all of your shit if you're not aware of it?
Do you think, because I remember people laying during yoga time flat as a board and falling asleep. Do you think subconsciously they refuse because it's like they, or maybe their body is like holding on to something so tightly that like, because like they would literally refuse. And I remember being in Rome, a lady would come and do yoga and it would just be me and like two other people out there. You'd be like, I'm not doing that. Do you think it's, what do you think that is? That it's,
well, let me lovingly say first.
Okay.
Doing things your way got you where you are, right? And there is a level of willingness that does feel really vulnerable for people to get in their bodies for the first time. Mm-hmm. So while I think sometimes it's too much for people, oftentimes I think it's a lack of willingness, you know, because when I lead, I'm not putting y'all in headstands. I don't want.
No.
You know, like it's a forward fold. It's a quad stretch. You know, it's very approachable and very gentle. I think it's one, there could be so much stuff in the body that they're just overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's valid. And two, it's I want to do things my way and get different results. Mm-hmm. That works wonders, let me tell you.
Yeah, we do want to try everything our way first.
Yeah. And, you know, I have had clients who resisted, and then at first felt like, eventually, not at first, they at first resisted, and then eventually they loved it, you mm-hmm. know? Yeah. In fact, I got one client a mat for her graduation gift and had everyone sign it because she was very much like, fuck this, I'm not doing this. And she got up at one point and her legs were shaking after doing yoga and she was like, I feel like I just had the best orgasm of my life. I was like, that's right.
I love that. Yeah. The signed mat, that's so cool.
Yeah. That kind of reminds me, I used to do martial arts. Mm-hmm. And when I first started, I would get really anxious. Mm-hmm. And in early recovery, I would get super anxious in my head. It's spotlight effect. Mm. The idea of people looking at me mm-hmm. while I was doing things, like it's the reason why I can't go to the gym mm-hmm. still mm-hmm. is because like I feel like I'm in a fishbowl. I'd rather be out hiking where like there aren't a bunch of people just watching me be a hamster just on birds. A wheel. Yeah. So like I wonder if there's part of that in effect, but it does seem like it'd be the willingness aspect.
Yeah.
It's cool that people come around.
Yeah. And it usually the people who are scared of the spotlight effect, as you so eloquently put it, do come around.
Yeah.
The unwilling people you kind of have to be a little bit more assertive with, you know? And that has been a gift of me working in the rooms too. I used to be like walk all over me, do whatever. And now it's really created great assertiveness within me, you know, and knowing where that line kind of is, like mm-hmm. when to push and when to respect, like, hey, you need to chill, you know?
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. For sure.
And speaking of knowing when and how to approach things, I want to talk about boundaries and how do you encourage boundaries as a form of self-respect and survival.
Yeah. I think I've shared this, but I didn't know boundaries existed outside of sports until I was in my late 20s. Mm-hmm. Nobody in my family had a boundary. Never. It was not talked about. It wasn't a thing, you know? And I remember one of my first therapists was like, well, what are your boundaries? And I was like, pardon? You know? Mm-hmm. And for me, I've really learned boundaries are, hey, this is how I can love you while still loving myself, mm-hmm. you know? And I learned like I have to do those in order to respect myself, right? And if I don't respect myself, I may pretend like I respect you, but deep down I probably don't, you know, mm-hmm. because I'm not good with me. Mm-hmm. But now I think I can still perfect the art for sure. It's always a learning thing, but establishing them without necessarily saying, I'm going to hold a boundary against you in regards to this. Just do it. You know, I gave the example of if certain people call me past a certain time, I don't answer, you know, and it's not because I don't care. I don't love you. It's this is what's safest for me, you know, and I don't want to resent hearing you talking in cursive on the phone. And, you know, like I can't handle it.
Talking in cursive on the phone.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that. Write that down.
scribble.
You know, when I had a counselor the second time I went to treatment ask me about boundaries, and I always thought, you know, I would take like stereotypical or like I don't know if stereotypical was the right word, things that it's like I guess common boundaries. Don't cuss at me, but my boyfriends would be cussing at me. Mm-hmm. Don't call me out of my name, but I was, you know. And I didn't know what boundaries were. And she had me categorize them into different forms of boundaries. And, yeah, I've learned to not speak them, but to live by them. Mm-hmm. And the more I respect myself, when somebody else has boundaries, I'll use Kim as an example. Kim is really good. Like, I will be loud and like I'm a little bit of a chatterbox and Kim will be like, hey, I love you, I'm just trying to work, and
can you wear some headphones? Do I need to get the headphones? Let's work this out, because and, you know, I enjoy working with you.
Previously I'd be like, no offense, what a bitch. Mm-hmm. Get over it.
Right,
like you know, who is Kim to tell me? And then I'm going around this whole place, and I'm like, man, Kim is such a jerk. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? But it's like, because I'm not comfortable with myself and I have no boundaries, that when somebody's putting their boundaries up, it's like, well, who are you? And so that's something that I've really enjoyed, is that now, like, if and it's like, and I also have an understanding of like who I am. I know I can be annoying, and I can acknowledge that. And, you know, sometimes I'll excuse myself, or, you know, not even just like in a work environment, but in general, like with my family, because mm-hmm. in my family, I feel like it's like certain boundaries, they're like, they take it like they're offended by it.
Well, and the only people who are offended by it are the people who used to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Right.
For the record. Yeah. I don't find you annoying at all. I find you very gregarious and interactive. And when I'm trying to edit a video with audio, that can get a little difficult. But boundaries, yeah, boundaries were something in early recovery I came into the rooms with. I didn't know what. I thought I knew what boundaries were, something that I detailed. I spoke them. I didn't act them. I spoke them, right? And I laid them out for other people. And I'm like, this is how you have to act around me, mm-hmm. because I sensitive. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, that didn't work really well, shockingly enough. Yeah. And then I learned, like, boundaries were one of the first things I tackled, because I knew I was a bit of a doormat. I knew I was a yes woman. Mm-hmm. I knew I didn't have any boundaries, and including with myself. Yeah. Like, and I heard in the rooms people talking about, learn to say no to yourself. Mm-hmm. And then learn how to say no to other people. And that's how that was the unlock for me, because I didn't know how to say no to me, let alone other people. Mm-hmm. So then I started learning that boundaries for me, the ones that actually work, are the ones that I uphold.
Yeah.
That I set for myself and I uphold because I love me. And that was a turnaround. That was a turning point, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, it goes back to that like belief, like people treat us how they feel about themselves, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But if that's true, I treat people how I feel about myself. Mm-hmm. You know, and if I don't have boundaries with myself and I can't tell myself no, I sure as shit can't tell Joe Schmo no, mm-hmm. you know.
I also learned that, excuse me, especially with my ex, when I voice my boundaries to certain, you know, you don't know who you're voicing your boundaries to. And there are people out there that are habitual line steppers, and they will push because they want to be like, mm-hmm. I can take advantage of this person. I can do this. I can do that. I was sharing with you guys before the show about my experience with, I stopped speaking my boundaries. Mm-hmm. I just started doing. Mm-hmm. And if I'm asked about it, it's like, okay, I'm going to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. you know, I'm not comfortable around you. And there's also power in like not explaining that. That's a boundary too. It's like, what? You're not, you know, if you're going to like try to come at me with like an argument, then it's like, I'm not, I don't have to explain anything to you. I'm not here to have a debate. And that has been huge in trying to navigate like dating life. Mm-hmm. I've had guys and they'll say stuff to me and I'm like, excuse me. Oh my gosh. I'm like, thank you for your, thank you. But I'm not going to sit here and have a debate with you. I'm just not going to talk to you anymore.
Right.
But I'm not going to tell you that I'm not going to. Right. I used to be like, and don't text me and don't talk to me. And sometimes I could fall back into like those habits. But for the most part, I just am like, it's so freeing to just step away.
Yeah.
To just not.
To just not.
That's such a power move for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do you encourage people to grow without like losing themselves and to create those boundaries?
I think like a lot of inner child work, right? Like our little tiny nugget selves were amazing, you know, and getting in touch with that energy is really liberating. You know, a lot of my clients feel like they're pieces of shit, right? Like they're terrible humans. I had this conversation this morning with a client. He's like, I'm just terrible. I said, do you have any like young pictures of yourself? And he's like, yeah. And I said, could you look at that and call him a piece of shit? And he was like, okay. You know, and life's, and we get, you know, like we're like little onions. We get these layers layered on top and we develop mechanisms that work for us for a time until they don't work for us anymore. And and getting to like the core essence of who we're all like, I truly struggle to believe anybody is born bad. You know, you've probably been in a group where I've asked, have you ever held a baby before, like a newborn baby? You're not like, this one's a dud.
We talked about it back that to the factory. We talked about that this week. Oh, you weren't here. We talked about that this week.
Yeah.
And I asked Christian, our patron, our boss, and I said, do you think people are inherently bad? He was like, no.
Yeah, me either.
I have met one demon child, but he was three. So he had time to like develop programming. Into.
Yeah. He wasn't born a demon.
Yeah.
He was developed into a demon.
I
didn't see
him as a baby. I saw him as a toddler and he was enough.
And but. Really tapping, like what I do for myself now that is really healing is what I needed when I was a nugget.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need to advocate for myself. Mm-hmm. That is such a power move for me now. I like to address stuff right off the bat, right? Like, if I get a text that I, you know, my best friend knows, I'll say, hey, the story I'm telling myself is you're going to abandon me because you're upset with me.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets the opportunity to say, okay, crazy pants, like not at all what I was trying to say, you know, but that's like soothing for that little girl in me, you know, because it is such a visceral, commanding fear of mine.
Yeah.
And I can operate from that place so easily. Mm-hmm. And when I do, when I operate from the fear of abandonment, boundaries are gone. Because I'll do whatever, just stay.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So if I can soothe her and give her what she needs, I show up more authentically. You know, I show up and I can give myself more of what is like soul soothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
How do you... So in especially because, I know for like myself, I still struggle with hating myself. I just had this conversation this week of I still find myself, you know, beating myself up about, you know, don't be lazy, you know, perfectionism, whatever. Like I remember feeling like, well, I'm going to start practicing with strangers of like. What? So here are my boundaries. Now I know them and I'm going to practice them with people that I don't really know. So it started, it was kind of like working out, like I'm training so that when I'm around the people that do know me, who I have allowed to treat me a certain way for so long and who are used to treat me a certain way, I will kind of like have more of a backbone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's also with like negative self-talk. And I know like here, when we're at work, if we hear one person be like, I'm a gross idiot, we're like, no, you're not.
We're
all
like, don't talk about my friend that way.
Right.
Like, you stop that this instant. How dare.
Well, yeah. But we can even do that with ourselves, right? Yeah. Because I have a crazy inner critic, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can make anything my fault. And I think for me, that's a means of control because if it's my fault, I can correct it and then I can have a different outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But my inner critic, she's nasty. You know, but if that bubbles up, the interruption game, right? You have so many years of playing the inner critic and talking shit about yourself. It's not going to fix overnight, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But almost like in a way disassociating from it. Like, I've named my inner critic.
Really?
Her name is Susan. Okay. And when she pops up, I'm like, Susan, I hear you. You're not needed today. Thank you. Bye. Susan, go away. No, thank you, Susan. You know, like it's very, because it kind of creates distance. You know, like it doesn't have to be me. Like if I'm observing it happening, this is like the whole gift of meditation, right? If I'm observing it happening, it's not me. Mm-hmm. Right? Like when you sit in meditation, you're observing, oh shit, I'm having a thought again. That's not you, because you're able to observe it. It's like watching a movie. You're not a movie when you watch a movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your, what is it? Your thoughts are just thoughts.
Like your thoughts.
There's no good or bad feelings. Your thoughts. You don't have to act on them.
Yeah.
But my program also interprets thoughts as just like sight and smell. It's another sensory experience. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. So they're not so personal. But yeah, meditation for me, that brought up like the, I lost it.
Bazinga.
Bazinga. Yeah. It happens all the time.
Oh, it's lost.
Yeah, it's gone. It's all right.
Wilson.
What is a piece of advice that you would give somebody out there that is struggling with healing that inner child?
Maybe like go be around little children, right? Because you wouldn't like look at little kids playing on a playground, swinging on a swing set and be like, dick, you know, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and we were all that at one point. Mm-hmm.
Dicks? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, some of us probably. Yes, me. But yeah. But, you know, like, I think that's the gift of desperation. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, if I am so desperate with changing my life, like, if I'm to that level of desperation, what do I need to do? Right. And being around kids, especially if they're like playing and having fun. Now, some of them kind of suck sometimes. But, you know, like seeing spirit, especially like Christmas time is like a perfect time. Like seeing the joy of like Christmas on a kid's face, like that used to be us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My 5-year-old, the neighbors across the street, they get inflatables. Mm. And they put away the Halloween inflatables, but they pulled out a big turkey inflatable. And he has been wanting to know about this turkey inflatable. So yesterday I was like, oh my gosh, the neighbor's here. She's outside. And my 5-year-old was like, what? I'm like, she's here.
But the turkey lady.
I was about to give him a shower. So this was on me. Why would I was like excited for him because he had been wanting to see this neighbor. And he was dressed. I had to throw on pants. He ran down the stairs, opened the front door, ran outside. He's like, hey, hey, hey. And I can still like at my parents' house, I can see like out the second floor window out across the street. Mm-hmm. And I run out and my stepdad was running outside too. But I hear him, hey, hey. And they're like, hey. And I come out. He goes, where you get that turkey? and he goes, blow it up. Because it was deflated. We ran across the street, and it's like I was overwhelmed with joy. Mm-hmm. Her boyfriend was. They stopped what they were doing, and they inflated the turkey. Mm-hmm. And he stood in front of the turkey, and he was pretending to be the turkey. And
that's
he's
really
like,
cute.
Me a turkey now. Mm-hmm. And it's like everybody was just so lit up with joy.
Yeah.
And it's like this is so simple. Man, like I need to enjoy life like this. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was just an awesome experience. Yeah. I don't know. I just wanted to share that. But it's like be around. If anybody wants to be around children, you can be around my children. Respectfully, appropriately. But my 5-year-old Blaze, he has that like just every, you know,
it's curiosity. Everything's wonder. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Aw.
Yeah.
He's like, I want that turkey. Mm-hmm. Me want that turkey. I know I said a piece of advice about that, but I also, you know, want to know what should families understand about their own recovery journey, especially, you know, families that are like normies. Mm-hmm. You know, what message do you have for them?
So there's this metaphor I always talk about. we're all in some kind of relationship, not necessarily romantic, but we're all in relationships throughout our life, right? Friends, family, coworkers, et cetera. If somebody is choosing metaphorically to get on the elevator and go up, right, which would be recovering, healing, doing the things, it becomes glaringly obvious if you don't, right? And do you want to drag them back down or do you want to stay stagnant, you know? So I think whether people like it or not, everybody plays a role. Like, I played a role in my mother's addiction as a little kid, you know, because I enabled her, you know. Did I know as much as some? No. But I definitely played a role, you know, and people don't like to hear that, right? I have a lot of clients whose parents don't want to hear that. But if they're not choosing to do their own work, whether it be Al-Anon, I'm very supportive of Al-Anon therapy, family support groups, whatever it may be, it's going to create a lot of issues within the family dynamic, you know, because you don't know how. Oftentimes there is a role. Me, for example, if I've dated a lot of addicts, right? Love them. But if they choose to get sober, my role that I've played since childhood gets threatened, right? The caretaker, the excuse maker, the whatever gets threatened. And if they don't need me anymore, that means they're going to have to choose me. And I don't like it, you know? You know, it makes it a little squirrely, right? So I think that, and that can go across all, you know, parents played a role. And when they don't have to play that role anymore, they don't feel as valuable in their kids' lives, you know, when they don't have to do the things that they used to do. And so that can threaten the dynamic of the relationship. So, again, Al-Anon, I'm a huge supporter of, because the three C's, like, I didn't cause it, I can't change it, and I can't cure it, right? But I can do my part. I can do my part.
I love that. Do you have any last questions before I ask Kelsey to walk us through my favorite activity?
Activity.
No, I don't.
We're going to do an activity, y'all. Okay. Tell us the activity.
We're going to do the activity and then I'll tell you the activity. Is that okay?
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Close your eyes.
We're about to do an activity, everybody. Everybody watching.
Don't watch because you're closing your eyes.
Yeah.
Okay. Take a deep breath in. Sigh it out. Okay. I want you to picture yourself in a kitchen. It can be your kitchen in your home now or your childhood kitchen, just one that's really familiar to you. Take a look around. Notice the cabinets. Notice the appliances. Notice the countertops. Are the lights on or are they off? Are the windows open? Is there a kitchen window? Look out the kitchen window. What's there? Is there music playing or maybe the background sound of the TV you can hear, or family members or loved ones? Just orient yourself to the space. And then in your right hand, you're holding a bright yellow lemon. It takes up majority of your palm. And you feel the weight of the lemon in your hand. You take your thumb, you feel the bumps in the grooves of the outside of the peel. You notice the little green stem from where it used to attach to a tree. Take this lemon, give it a sniff. You don't get anything super pungent yet, but you get a little bit of that lemony scent. You take this lemon, you set it down on a cutting board. You cut into it lengthwise, so you have two halves. You notice the inside of the lemon is a paler yellow than the outside. It's a little bit cooler to the touch. You get a little bit of that lemon juice on your fingertips, and you feel the viscosity of it on your fingers. And then you take one of these halves, you cut a wedge away like you would get on a water in a restaurant. Take this wedge, pop it into your mouth, bite down. It's cool, it's acidic, it's tart, maybe there's even a touch of sweetness. Open your eyes. What happened?
My mouth is wet. Like. Ba-dum-bum. It felt like.
Yeah.
I felt
the corners of my jaw got tight.
Yep. So this is the lemon exercise, I guess. we were able to elicit a physical response to an imagined experience, right? Mm-hmm. And this is what we're doing all the time, mm-hmm. right? I, for example, today I was in the whole, why am I going on a podcast? What do I have to talk about? I don't have any letters next to my name. I'm an imposter, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Like created a physical response, you know? And we're doing it all the time, right? Yeah. So just as easy as I can do that with a lemon, I can close my eyes. I can envision a really joyful memory, right? And get a joyful experience from my body, right? And again, make it something you know pretty intimately. Like for me, I went out to Colorado and did this cold plunge in Poudre Canyon. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, oh, it was the best. You know, it was liberating. Or like Walter, like the first day I adopted Walter, doing my home visit with Walter. Tap into something that brings joy to your body and you can feel your shoulders will drop. Mm-hmm. Your jaw will like loosen, you know, and we can create the physical response. And I think that's like, we create our realities, right? And if I stay up here and I listen to Susan all the time, my reality ain't so cute.
Yeah.
So this actually ties into the thing I forgot.
Oh, yay! We did it!
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'll just let it go. So you were talking about your inner critic, mm-hmm. and I do meditative exercises. Mm-hmm. I do meditations. And the visualization, there's a couple that stuck with me. I don't know if anybody is into anime here, but like picturing my inner voice as a chibi, mm-hmm. like just that silly little cartoon, like took away the power.
Yeah, I love that.
From the inner critic. Yeah. And I would just be like, I see you. Stop
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stop that. And then the other thing I started doing was like a kind of like for anybody who's familiar with Harry Potter, the Boggart. Mm. If I would get I'd feel how dark my thoughts were getting. I would put roller skates on that spider, mm. you know, like I would just make it be like you again, just like you stop that.
See you later.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Being yeah. ridiculous.
Yeah. I love that.
You know, so that was yeah. just one of those things that because I love the imagination that comes into the meditative practice
yeah.
and the power of just like flipping the script.
Yeah.
So,
and even imagination's great for your inner child too, right? Mm-hmm. 'Cause like yes. most adults don't walk around and playing pretend all the time, you know, like, but to tap into that mm-hmm. is like, it's creative energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing about interning here that's been wonderful is tapping into the creative energy. Mm-hmm. I've really tapped into that and it's unlike anything I've ever done in my life. It's so liberating. It's amazing.
I'm honored to get caught up in your crazy schemes mm. of your creativity. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah,
to
I see get them wrapped work. Up in crazy schemes. I'm like, it. Guys, everybody, now we're gonna do this and we're gonna film that. And what about if we did this? And what about if we did that? And it's amazing. I love it.
There was one I was like, I won't be in it, but I'll film it. And then by the end of it, I was like, fine.
We got Kim running through the forest, pretending to be in Twilight.
Yep.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. Doing the like run by stare at the camera thing.
Yeah. But it's like, it's so freeing because, you know, we're laughing, we're joking around and we're just like not taking ourselves super serious. Mm-hmm. And it's like, when was the last time that you didn't take yourself super serious?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's such like the question that comes to mind to ask for people to ask themselves is like, what do you need permission for? Mm-hmm.
There's an Alan Watts quote I really mm-hmm. like that's like, don't be serious, be sincere.
Mm-hmm.
I love take that to heart.
Yeah.
I'm a pretty playful person though. So yeah. I'm like yesterday.
yeah. So before we wrap up, I wanted to do some rapid fire. Mm-hmm. They're going to just be quick questions I'm going to ask you and you just shoot. Okay. What's harder, holding a yoga pose or holding a boundary?
Ooh, holding a boundary.
If healing were a snack, what would it be?
Healing were a snack. Maybe wasabi peas.
Oh.
Okay. Elaborate.
I mean, it's a little spicy, but you keep coming back for more.
Ooh.
I like it.
That's good. That's a good answer.
Thanks.
Which is more stressful, traffic in Atlanta or meditation with your eyes open?
Ooh, traffic in Atlanta.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
If yoga mats could talk, what would yours say about you?
Please clean me.
If recovery had a mascot, what animal would it be?
Walter!
Dead or alive celebrity you would want to do yoga with?
Well, so this is a little bit of a cheat because I feel kind of prepared for this because I listened to the episode with Jimmy and you guys asked him, you know,
who would he want to interview? Yes. Yeah.
And I've asked all my clients this week, all of it. Robin Williams.
Mm. Oh, I love that. Mm. Yoga with Robin Williams. Dang, that's a good episode name. And then finally, one thing you refuse to apologize for. Example, snacks, naps, boundaries.
Saying no.
Snaps from the audience.
Yep.
All right. Kelsey, where can the audience find you?
I guess online. I do the Instagram thing. I don't have a whole lot of online presence, but at practicing_recovery.
Okay.
Yeah.
And any left final thoughts? All right.
Is it that time?
Yeah.
All right. All right, y'all. Check out the Most High Media app in the description box below on YouTube, where you will find this episode and previous episodes, as well as documentaries and more recovery-based original content. Find Most High Media on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Make sure to follow, like, subscribe, you know, all the things. The show is made possible from the Georgia Opioid Crisis Abatement Trust. Thank you. And thank you to our donors and sponsors. This has been the Most High Show.
Woo. Yay! Walter's wagging his tail.